On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Shu Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, you're on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew, and joining us on the Commons today, we have Jean Winters. Jean is an attorney in Florida who has just won a big case, and this is a case that has implications across the country because the things that Jean dealt with in this particular case are happening all over the place. So, Jean, without further ado, welcome. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Chu. I appreciate it. Always a pleasure.
Please tell us what your case is about.
Okay. Well, this was in an older community, and this is particularly true, is a very common problem in older communities especially. And I have to say, though, that the state laws do vary. So Florida's law may be different than another law regarding some of these issues. However, in Florida, let me start with the issue here. The issue was that a mobile home community of over 900 lots had held themselves out to be an over 55 community. And for years and years and years, for 24 years. And they also decided over the years that they would be mandatory. It's a mandatory association. It was a property owners association that was incorporated by three lot owners and not the developer. And sometimes people confuse the corporate documents in an association and covenants running with the land. And one of the biggest reasons they do that can happen is because in modern developments, a developer will usually have what's called a declaration of covenants, and this is for HOAs, a declaration of covenants, conditions, and restrictions, which is a CC&R, as most people have heard of. And when the developer creates the covenants, he will, or she, will often attach the corporate documents, which are the articles and bylaws, as exhibits, thereby incorporating those into what's called the declaration. In that case, people sometimes think of that these documents are all the same, and they're not. And this is particularly true in older communities where some of the older covenants, in the case I litigated recently, it was a property owners association, but that did not occur until 10 years after the developer had started selling lots. And the developer had no covenant that required mandatory membership, no covenant authorizing the association to lien or foreclose. And those are, in Florida, critical conditions to being a mandatory association. And the developer, many years after he had sold the properties and had moved on to other projects, had attempted to assign his right to amend to this POA. Now, this was about the time that in the late 80s that the FHA said that you cannot discriminate on the basis of age, but made an exception
okay.
made an exception for over 55. So they decided they wanted to be an over 55, and they also decided that they should have the ability to amend and enforce covenants, and so they asked the developer to assign his right to amend. The problem there was that the developer had already sold the property. So this was in 1986 that he allegedly assigned his right. He reserved the right in the covenants. He reserved the sole right to amend. But Florida law says that once a developer, and this was true, there's a statute now that specifically prohibits such provisions. But even then, it doesn't prohibit the provision that a developer can maintain and reserve sole powers to amend the documents, but it does prohibit a developer from retaining that right forever on. It makes no sense, because once the developer is sold, what interest does he have in the property? And even then, in 1986, before the statute, there was case law that suggested this. So what we ended up doing is getting the assignment declared void. And once the assignment was declared void, the amendment that the POA did was also void. And the judge also ruled that it was never a mandatory association. So in essence, what happened is this ruling overturned 24 years of practices by the association of suing people who were not over 55, or usually that was the issue, suing people who were not over 55, and most frequently those people settled rather than take it to court because they were afraid of losing, or their attorneys didn't, recommended that they settle. And many of them were forced out of their homes. So in essence, I guess what I'm saying here is the board had told not only the homeowners, but they had told realtors, real estate agents, and closing agents, title companies, that they were a mandatory association, required interviews of prospective buyers, required prospective buyers to pay off any outstanding assessments that they claimed were owed. They called them dues. And that was, they put up signs everywhere saying it was over 55. They even got registered with the Florida Commission on Human Relations as an over 55 community. And the problem there is that they were not. They never were. They never had the authority to amend the original covenants to make it an over 55 community. And they certainly did not have the authority to claim that they were mandatory.
I want to go back for just a second to something you just said, and that is that the board was conducting interviews before they allowed you to buy in there?
Yes, they were. And they had written letters to realtors and closing agents and title companies saying, we are a mandatory association. We are an over 55 community. So the closing agents would, of course, then tell the prospective buyers that they were subject to an interview and had to pay, they would ask from the association, from the Property Owners Association, what's called an estoppel, which is with a mandatory association where dues, where assessments are mandatory, is how much is owed. And that's all an estoppel is it's a statement that says this much is owed, and it's a statement on which third parties can rely. So when someone wanted to buy a property, they would go in, and I had realtors saying, but of course this is an over 55 community. We've been selling properties in here for over 20 years. So it's not, in this case, actually, the board knew, it had many attorneys' opinions, that it was not a mandatory association. The over 55 was not as clear unless you looked into it, which I did. But in fact, the board never had the authority to amend and make it an over 55 community because they lacked the authority to amend the covenants. They were not, the association was not created by the developer.
So here we have a situation, and this is something that seems to be happening across the board, across the country, really, where you have boards that are acting outside the scope of their authority, doing things and saying things and demanding things and getting things that they have no right to do.
Well, let me give you another example. And again, this is Florida specific. Florida was one of the first states to have what's called a Marketable Record Title Act, which essentially says that covenants, it is a policy that stale covenants shouldn't be in effect forever. Ad infinitum, you know, for 300 years, right?
Well, say that again.
Okay. A policy, there is a policy, and it was codified, and Florida was maybe the first state to do that, I'm not sure. It's called the Marketable Record Title Act. And it provides for the expiration of covenants after a certain period of time. Now, that the expiration may be different depending, it could be different if there were 50 homes in, just say 50 homes in a community. There could be 50 different expiration dates.
Wow. Base.
Yeah. And so what associations do and association lawyers do, and their right to do this, is advise their clients if they want to preserve their covenants, they need to do so before 30 years has passed since the recording of the original declaration. Okay?
I thought covenants ran with the land and were
there. They do. No. They run, well, again, there are states that where this is not true, but in Florida.
Okay.
And possibly probably some other states as well. I know of a couple, but it depends. You can't completely generalize, but some of the same issues are certainly raised nationwide. Covenants can expire in Florida. And the idea behind that is, that's why it's called the Marketable Record Title Act, is for one thing, developers don't want to develop property. They don't want to be stuck with covenants that are 80, 100 years old in a community that's completely changed its character.
See, I tell everybody, if you own property that is not part of an HOA, record a covenant on there that says it will never be part of an HOA. Because at least in Virginia, we've run into a case where there was a covenant recorded eons ago and by a farmer who owned the property. And a developer bought it, didn't get clear or didn't check, and built all these townhouses, come to find out that there was a covenant that had a specific setback. And, of course, with townhouses, you don't have setbacks because you have them right almost on the street with very little setback. And the developer had to tear all of those down. This goes back a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting that in Florida they expire within 30 years unless you do something.
Well, no, they don't always expire within 30 years. If you preserve the covenants, and this was, I don't want to get off onto a tangent, but this is one example. If you preserve the covenants, if the association preserves the covenants within 30 years, then they capture all the lots or all the parcels. Otherwise, after 30 years, they risk the chance that one or more lots may start dropping out, so to speak. In other words, the covenants expire as to those individual lots. It's a confusing issue for many people.
It's an interesting point, though.
It is an interesting point, and the reason, your description is a good example of why sometimes covenants, even in community associations, homeowner associations, condos, that never happens because the book and page of the covenants or of the declaration of condominium is always part of the legal description. But with homeowner associations, and this makes some sense actually, covenants can expire. Now, obviously, that's more troublesome when there are private roads and there are many amenities, because who takes care of it? But many communities don't have that. And so much has changed in 30 years, there's no real reason for an association.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so that does happen. I mean, the covenants literally become stale. And that was the whole point of the Marketable Record Title Act. Now, the point I was going to make, without going off into too much of a detour, was that even some attorneys, and I've seen this happen, association attorneys didn't realize that once someone's covenants have expired as to their property, they may be able to revitalize. The Florida legislature enacted a statute that allows associations to revitalize the covenants with a majority of owners' approval. And there are very strict steps that have to be taken. But under those circumstances, if the association ends up being revitalized and the covenants are revitalized, but the person whose property had already been marted out or whose covenants had expired can no longer be liened or foreclosed, ever. And I've seen even attorneys, it's not just boards that make mistakes. I've seen attorneys lien and attempt to foreclose and in some cases get away with it because no one realizes that A, that would be unconstitutional, and B, the statute actually states that as to people whose covenants have expired, the priority, which is what the issue is here, is as of the date of recording of the revitalized covenants. It doesn't relate back, which means that if a person has homestead and continues maintaining that homestead, they can't be foreclosed because Florida has a constitutional right, homestead right, again, which some states do not have. But Florida has a constitutional homestead right against forced sale by creditors. And that's based on priority. So once the covenants expire, the person's homestead right drops into first place, so to speak. So when the covenants are revitalized, their homestead right now has priority. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Actually, it really does make a lot of sense.
Right. So, you know, there are lawyers that make the mistakes, and you know, we're all human. We all make mistakes. But when I hear someone saying, like you mentioned to me earlier, well, the board said this or the board said that, even attorneys make mistakes. And certainly boards do not often understand what their rights and obligations are. Okay. Another example, again, in Florida, is a board is rulemaking. A board usually has rulemaking authority. Many boards do not understand that the rulemaking authority has limits. And those limits are by what is either expressly provided, the authority that is either expressly provided in the covenants or reasonably inferred from the covenants. For example, if the covenants say that the board has the authority to enact rules related to the common areas, then the board is constrained in its rulemaking authority to issues related to the common areas. They can't create rules that don't exist in the covenants. For example, and I've seen this happen, a board decided that it wanted to interview renters. And charge them $1,000, for example, refundable.
Wow.
Yeah. And their covenants gave them no such authority, but they've been operating under that premise for years. And they haven't been challenged, or not challenged meaningfully. And their covenants did not provide them with the authority to just create rules willy-nilly. It was very specific as to what the board's authority to create rules was. So that's another example where I don't think boards, sometimes they are not either given the education, or they don't want to pay attention, or they don't understand, whatever it is, they sometimes do exceed their authority. And this can come back to bite, and often does. Just like this association in Martin County, Florida, which is north of us, that association was never what it claimed to be. But yet, estoppels, title agents require, you know, closing agents require, title companies and closing agents required estoppels and would not close on people's property until they paid past due, quote, dues. None of that was legal.
We're talking to Jean Winters. You're on the Commons, and I'm Shu Barthong. We're coming to you from Radio Fairfax, right here in sunny Virginia for once. It's been raining so much. Jean, you got involved for a very specific reason in this case. And now you said the people just kind of rolled over for 24 years. The board has been doing all sorts of things that the board did not have the right
to
do.
I'll give you a little bit of background if you'd like.
Yeah, I would very much.
Okay. A woman came to me who wanted to opt out, quote, of the Property Owners Association. And she had a tale that left me speechless, to be blunt. A disabled man was sued by the Property Owners Association for not being over 55. And it was his homestead property. And the man did not have counsel. He did not make a good appearance because he was disabled and in pain and not taking his pain meds, and which isn't a good idea, not unless it's under doctor's guidance anyway. But he was, you know, he was not really able to be there sufficiently to know how to argue for himself or what to argue, which often happens with pro se litigants or people that represent themselves. They don't understand what the real issue is, and they go off on a tangent that is irrelevant sometimes. And so the association attorney at that time, now they had gone through three or four other attorneys who told them that they were not a mandatory association. They finally found an attorney that would sue people the way that they wanted to.
Oh.
Okay, so she sued him for an over 55. The judge believed her rather than the pro se litigant and granted an injunction for the association, essentially kicking the man out of his own home. Because he lived there. And then the association attorney said, and we're a mandatory association, so we're entitled to attorney's fees and costs. Now, an award of attorney's fees and costs is either statutory or contractual. I mean, there has to be a basis for it. There was no contractual provision for prevailing party fees. But Chapter 720, which is the Homeowners Association statute in Florida, does contain a provision for prevailing parties' fees. So in essence, this attorney told the court that it was a mandatory association, got an award for attorney's fees.
Oh, wow.
And then executed that judgment, levied against his property, and took his home. They had his home was sold at a sheriff's sale.
To pay legal fees. To pay the legal fees.
To pay the legal fees. And he had no mortgage on that property. He owned it free and clear. And he had three teenage children. And they threw him out on his ear. They sold off all his belongings.
His belongings?
And wouldn't let him go near the property.
His belongings, like his
They
furniture?
Sold off his, yes. Yes, they sold
do they
everything.
Have that? Do they, can they do that? Well, I mean, I know they
did
it.
They can do anything if they get away with it, and that's the problem. In this case, they got away with it. Now, when I heard that story and actually read the pleadings of that case, the more astonished, let me put it that way, I became, not only at the situation, but at the gross miscarriage of justice, and an attorney, frankly, an attorney that would do that. This other woman who brought that, well, backing up, he did not get counsel he didn't even seek counsel until long after the appeals time had run because he was in a state of shock.
Understandable, very understandable.
Right. So what I did is I wrote a letter for this woman telling the Property Owners Association that she didn't want to be a part of this association anymore. It wasn't mandatory. She didn't want to be a part of it. And their response was to sue her for having her 45-year-old daughter stay with her. So we counterclaimed and we asked for a declaratory action on whether or not the association was mandatory, the two main claims, whether the association was mandatory and whether in this case, the amendment was done in 1989. Of course, they raised the statute of limitations. I said, not so fast. This Property Owners Association never had the authority to amend. So this amendment was void ab initio, and the statute does not run. Void ab initio it was void from the beginning because mm-hmm. the person doing it didn't have the authority to do it in the first place. So we won on that issue. And we won on both issues, actually. And I can't go into detail what's going on now, but we're tying up the remainder of the case, and hopefully this man will get his property back or get compensated.
Your case is not over with yet.
Not completely.
No, okay. Because I do...
The ruling, there is a final order.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's pretty obvious that we've agreed to a resolution. Let's put it that way. I can't really speak more on that, but we've agreed to a resolution. And now it's just tying up those ends.
Okay.
They're not appealing it. They have no basis or no grounds for an appeal anyway.
It's not going to come back.
No.
Okay.
And they have acknowledged that they are not over 55. They posted the judge's ruling on the website. And, you know, my personal opinion is that they knew for a long, long time that what they were doing was not right. But who knows? I mean, maybe some of them did, maybe some of them didn't. But I think that it's pretty obvious because they had so many different attorneys telling them that they weren't.
But they didn't want to hear that, so they hired
them. Exactly.
So they hired the one who said, yes, we can do it.
Yeah, it's kind of like if something's wrong and you're in denial and you don't want to admit it, you go to six different doctors to hear what you want to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's all I can liken it to.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I don't want to hear that, so we'll find someone else.
Right. And that does happen. And, you know, it's people need to be aware that, you know, this is particularly true with older communities because of the way that covenants were drafted and written back then. But even now with modern communities, boards often exceed their powers because of some of the examples that I've given, the revitalization of covenants in which sometimes attorneys even, and I'm not, you know, attorneys don't even know sometimes that they can't foreclose on homestead properties once the covenants have expired in Florida. That doesn't mean that the covenants, if they revitalize, and the word is revitalize, if they basically re-up the covenants, then if they do that successfully and properly, then the people are bound, but they can't, but those whose covenants had expired can't be foreclosed on. And, you know, another very common thing I see, as I mentioned earlier, is boards creating rules without having the authority to do so.
That, there have been so many cases lately where the homeowners have won because the boards have done absolutely what they wanted to do. And I get calls from people. It's no big surprise. And they'll tell me what's going on, and I'll say, well, the first thing you do is you get a copy of your covenants, and you figure out whether or not the board has the authority to do that. Oh, yeah, it says they've got the authority for rulemaking. Well, yeah, but that's not a rule, you know.
Yeah, the authority for rulemaking, though, is not limitless.
No, I know. Go back.
In fact, actions taken that exceed the scope of their authority is called ultra vires.
Yes.
In a corporation, and as we know, associations are corporations.
What advice would you give a homeowner who's sitting there listening to this going, the board's telling me to do this, that, and the other? And
well, couple of things. First of all, I would not take any precipitous action without knowing for sure what your rights are. And I would consult with, if it's a real issue, a serious issue that you haven't been able to resolve, I would consult with an attorney, but be careful. Make sure you consult with an attorney who's very familiar with association law.
There's a perception, I know where you come down on this, but there's a perception among a lot of homeowners that feel that they're going into the lion's den by hiring someone who's a firm, committed association attorney and is not going to be able to look at the other side because they're so firmly entrenched in the association.
Well, yes and no. Usually that's true. There are some firms that simply will not represent homeowners. There are some that will, depending on the circumstances and if there's no conflict. One of the reasons that association firms that do, you know, that represent hundreds or thousands of associations, I don't know about thousands, but hundreds of associations, there frequently would be a conflict.
Yeah.
So they are ethically bound by the rules regarding conflicts like that. And so that's one reason some don't take it. There are some associations that will take a homeowner's case. And I know of one or two attorneys that are quite good that work for a large, well, it's not a huge association firm, but one of the better known association firms. And I respect them. You know, I respect their work.
Now, there's some attorneys who are extremely good and who will follow the law, but there are some attorneys, and I've run into them, and I'm sure that you have too, who are looking at this in terms of, you know, if we win this case, then it's really going to cut into the association's ability to do things. I mean, the first thing they do is start whining about, well, how are associations going to be able to enforce rules if we can't do this, that, or the other, you know. Fining is unconstitutional, but we've got to enforce rules, so to hell with the Constitution. And that's their attitude, and that's pretty much their attitude.
You know, at least in Florida, fining is authorized by statute, and until and unless there is a court ruling that the statute's unconstitutional, fining is allowed. I personally don't like it. I don't think it's usually effective, but that's my own personal opinion. Just like I think that you can get into real hot water by authorizing boards to interview prospective owners or renters. I think there are many pitfalls with that.
I've heard of cooperatives doing that.
And co-ops. Well, co-ops are altogether a different creature.
They're a different creature, but I have never heard of an association where the board has the unmitigated gall to decide they're going to interview people before allowing them to buy into the association. And that's just...
Oh, that actually happens frequently. And if it's authorized by the covenants, they can do it. Now, what often boards don't realize, and this is one of the pitfalls, is in most declarations it's express, but, you know, there are express provisions even, that require a board, if they do, a board that denies a prospective buyer, to provide a substitute buyer on the same terms that was in the original contract. So what boards sometimes do is we'll decide, well, we don't want so-and-so buying the property, so we're going to deny him, and they forget about the second half of that.
Well, you know, it would seem to me that they would be skating on very thin ice in terms of fair housing.
That's exactly, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you're absolutely.
Because the only thing that they can really deny you the right to buy in is financial. And if you're getting a mortgage, the bank is going to be taking care of that. So what are you doing looking at this? Are you going to decide that they've got too many kids, they're the wrong color, they're the wrong religion, they look a little different?
You know that one of the earliest reasons for covenants, of course, was for racial discrimination.
Oh, absolutely, and that's highly illegal now.
It is illegal now. You can still find deeds in the public records, because once they're there forever.
Yeah.
You can still find deeds that have racial covenants. They're just not enforceable. And what has evolved, unfortunately, is the more covert kinds of discrimination, where they find excuses that are unrelated to racial discrimination or gender or whatever, you know, any of the protected classes, and claim it's another reason, or they don't give a reason at all. The problem with that is when there's a pattern, they can still end up in hot water. They can still end up on the wrong side of an FHA claim. And that's a huge pitfall.
If they don't give a reason, if they don't say, well, all right, we're not going to, you know, allow you to buy in here because you're a single mother, and we just don't like single mothers. We want normal families.
Well, that would be illegal.
That would be absolutely illegal. But if they didn't tell you, that's why they're denying you the right to buy in there, and you file a claim, whether that's the reason or not, you can always file a complaint with them.
Absolutely. It's another, you know, if there is an authorization in the covenants for screening tenants or owners, prospective owners, the board I can't emphasize this enough, a board must have some objective criteria that is legal and follow it consistently. Otherwise, it would be too easy to show that there is a pattern of discrimination,
whether they
admit it or not.
Yeah, I would tell people, file a complaint and let them investigate. You know,
and that can happen.
And they should. It's the only time that your tax dollars are going to do something for you in an HOA.
Right. I mean, you know, one of the problems, and I was thinking about this today, in fact, one of the problems with associations in general is there are boards that don't know what their rights and obligations are, and attorneys and property managers that are hired by the current board and therefore want to maintain their jobs, so sometimes are willing to stretch the line. It's a real problem, and homeowners should not assume that everything the board does is right. On the flip side of that, they shouldn't assume that it's wrong either. And I see this all too frequently, where a homeowner says, "I don't have any covenants anymore," and they don't understand MARTA. Or they say, "This isn't a mandatory association," when it is, and then they file a lawsuit and realize too late that they were wrong.
Explain MARTA.
Marketable Record Title Act, where covenants can expire.
Okay.
There is a common misperception that the covenants as to all the lots expire 30 years after the recordation of the original covenants. That's not true.
Okay. But when we throw out these things, because then I get, what does that mean? So if we explain
Well, again, this is Florida specific.
Okay.
The Marketable Record Title Act was originally enacted as a statute in Florida in the 1960s to provide for the reality that sometimes covenants grow stale because circumstances change, neighborhoods evolve over time. And they're really no longer applicable. And developers, as you aptly pointed out, developers really don't want to get stuck with some covenant that makes no sense and that prevents development.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So Florida was one of the first states, if not the first. I'm not positive if it was. I think it was the first, but not sure. Anyway, it was at least one of the first states to enact such a statute that allows for the expiration of covenants after a certain period of time based on what's known as a chain of title. And I won't go into detail on that. If someone really is curious, you know, you certainly look it up.
Yeah.
But, you know, or find an attorney, again, very familiar with association law. And that isn't always easy to do, as you pointed out, but it is important. In other words, while homeowners shouldn't assume that everything the board says is right, they also shouldn't assume without a darn good basis that the board is wrong.
Yeah, but I've heard board members say, well, why can't I do that? My brother lives in an association, and they do it all the time.
I know.
And
I know.
So they don't, there's this misunderstanding, this misguided thinking that people have that if you can do it in one association,
you can do it here. And of course that's not true.
That's not true. And you don't even know that they have the right to do what they're doing. They just haven't been caught yet.
Well, like this situation in Martin County. They acted on this under this misperception for 24 years.
It's amazing that it went 24 years before somebody came along and said, hey, wait a minute, guys, you know, you can't do that.
Well.
Jean, how many people do you think they foreclosed on, and how many people have they abused, really, over the years?
I won't say foreclosed on. I don't know that they foreclosed on people, but they've gotten judgment. At least in one case, they got a judgment and kicked a person out of their home and got attorney's fees. Well, let me rephrase that. Got attorney's fees and kicked a person out of their home on that basis, okay?
And this is the gentleman you were talking about.
Right.
The disabled gentleman.
Right.
Was he the first one in 24 years? You don't know
I
that.
Think it was. No, I do. It was the first where they actually took it to trial. In most of the cases, they have forced out dozens of people, probably several dozen. I mean, this is a large community. But what they would do is file a lawsuit and then settle. because either the attorney, either the person didn't have an attorney, or the person had an attorney that said, well, you know, they're an over 55, you're not 55, without looking into it deeper to see whether or not they had the authority to create such an amendment. Yeah. And so what happened is every time they settled, they would shove it under the rug and continue acting as they've always acted.
And, of course, since they got away with it once, then they must have the authority to do that, right?
Right. And, in fact, they tried to use this man's, the judgment against this man as precedent to bar my client, for example, from defending herself. And Florida law prohibits that. It's something called, a little thing called due process. That does still exist.
Yeah, I think that's in the U.S. Constitution, too, isn't it?
I think it is, and it's applicable to the states, and if you're in a court proceeding, you know, you're entitled to be heard, unless you had an opportunity to litigate the case that they're attempting to use to bar you from bringing an action or from even defending yourself. In this case, they were trying to bar my client from even defending herself.
How could they do that?
It's called collateral estoppel. And the attorney who pushed this did not understand that concept and what the basis underpinnings of collateral estoppel meant.
So your client is doing okay. You think you're going to be able to get these disabled gentlemen's house back?
That remains to be seen. We're hoping. We're hoping that he will be compensated adequately, whether it's property back. Obviously, property that they sold, he may never recover, but we don't, you know, I can't really opine as to where that's going because it's still not resolved.
There have been so many stories over the years, Jean, where people like this gentleman have lost their homes. And it's heartbreaking. It's appalling. It is disgusting. It is revolting. And quite often, the association doesn't have the right to do it. I mean, let's not even talk about having the heart. We've heard of people who are having brain surgery.
Fighting, I know.
Where they've come home and they found that their houses have been sold. You know.
Well, unfortunately, there's no exception. If there is an obligation to pay assessments, there's no exception for people who are elderly or ill.
There is no exception. Absolutely.
No.
And I don't think there should be an exception.
I don't either.
But
unfortunately, I know it's heartbreaking, but if assessments are legitimate, if they're levied properly, if covenants haven't expired, if it's mandatory association, a lot of ifs, then assessments are owed, and either they're paid or they're not paid.
Sometimes you have stories like Winona Blevins, who actually paid her assessments, but the treasurer decided he was going to foreclose. He'd already started the process.
Oh, my God.
And
well, actually, I know that that's happened, either misapplication of payments. In fact, there was a case recently in Florida about that where there have been a couple of cases where association boards and even attorneys would not accept partial payments. If they had accepted the payments or let's just say if they had accepted the payments, there wouldn't have been enough to sue over. And one case talked about the sloppy bookkeeping. They were so bad at bookkeeping that they couldn't prove what was owed.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty routine. That's normal.
I know, but that's very normal. The case resolved in favor of the homeowner because they finally determined that had they accepted payments and had their bookkeeping been accurate, they never would have had the right to foreclose.
There have been so many cases where the homeowner has tried very hard to work with the association, come up with a payment plan. They acknowledge they owe the money. They've fallen on hard times. They, you know, in some cases they've been in the hospital, have not been able, physically able to do it. And the association has steadfastly refused to deal with them. They want full payment now. And of course it's sort of spiraled out of control because now we've added all kinds of late fees and interest charges, and mm-hmm. the attorney has pushed the print button on his computer a couple of times, and that's added a few thousand dollars. So when you look at what's actually owed...
Well, a little bit more than that is involved, but okay.
Yeah, I know, but they're just the general things. You've got some of these attorneys that... I've seen them work. I mean, it's pretty pathetic. But there was one thing in the case that you sent me that I read that I really, really liked. And I definitely want to keep this on the skyline. And that's an association cannot benefit from its own wrongdoing.
Absolutely. The judge added that he asked for proposed orders from both parties before the hearing, which was a summary judgment hearing, meaning there were no disputed facts. All facts, the material facts, the determinative facts had either been stipulated to or there was otherwise no disagreement as to the basic facts. Either they're on the record, stipulated to, or whatever. So the only issue was in matter of law. And the judge added that last paragraph, used my proposed order and added the last paragraph. And it was, he zeroed right into the heart of it.
Well, there's the rest of that sentence. It is tasked with knowing its own
that's
restrictive
right.
covenants. And
well, that's from a case called Barnett and Klein, or Barnett Klein. I can't remember the entire name of the case, but it's Barnett Klein was one of the parties. And yes, the association is tasked with knowing its covenants. And
what a novel idea, Jean.
I know it is, isn't it? And they can't use defenses like, well, what frequently happens is, and happened here, is they required everybody to sign an acknowledgement that it was over 55 and an acknowledgement it was a mandatory association, or that they would adhere to, you know, comply with the bylaws and telling them it's mandatory, and they'd sign off on that and then try to use that against them later. And the upshot of that is for several reasons. One was what you described, but there are other equitable reasons. You can't benefit from your own wrongdoing. That's a matter of equity.
I love that. I couldn't end the show without coming up with that. I'd written that down. It's got to be said.
Well, it's common sense, isn't it?
I love it. I mean, how basic can you get?
That's pretty basic.
How
just
basic
like,
can you get?
You know, you can't convey something you don't have. You can't sell something you don't have.
Hey, it makes sense to me.
I mean, these are very basic premises that sometimes are forgotten.
Jean, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
This is the second attempt at doing this, and I really appreciate the fact that you stuck with me and that we did the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Jean.
All right.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs. Life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.